Hello and welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. My name is Karl Ozhachovsky, and I'll be your host for today's program. Today's program is actually a really special one. We try and sometimes do some different stuff on Animal Voices, and this week we actually pre-recorded the program on the TTC, on Toronto's subway system, because today, October 11th, is actually the official launch day of the second ever Bee Veg ad campaign. There are going to be 1,000 ads going up around the TTC subway system in Toronto, and we are going to speak with Kimberly Carroll and Lisa Kramer. They are the two great minds behind that ad campaign, about what motivated them, how the idea started, and what they hope to get out of it. And that interview takes place on the TTC. So do stay tuned for that. In the meantime, have some news. The first piece of news coming to us from citynews.ca. And if you live in Toronto, you've heard about this already, I'm sure. But if you don't live in Toronto, this is a pretty big deal. And we tried to actually get some city councillors on the program to talk about this, but we're unable to do so. So I'm just going to read the story. The headline is, Toronto bans the sale of cats and dogs in pet stores. Toronto City Council voted Wednesday, this was a couple of weeks ago, to ban the sales of cats and dogs in pet stores, becoming the second Canadian city to do so. Quote, you can no longer buy dogs in a pet store, Councillor Glenn De Beermaker told reporters. De Beermaker had proposed the bylaw back in May, arguing that many of the animals come from puppy mills. Quote, animal cruelty has to stop, he added. Earlier this year, council voted to restrict pet stores to selling dogs and cats that only come from shelters, humane societies, and certified breeders. Now, no dogs or cats will be sold in pet stores, no matter where they come from. Toronto is the second Canadian city to restrict the sale of animals in pet shops. Richmond, BC decided to ban the sale of dogs in pet stores in 2010. For one Toronto shop, that's been their policy all along. Quote, we choose not to sell cats or dogs, Kalo Gallagher, dog and cat manager at Menagerie Pet Shop on Parliament Street, told City News. Quote, we don't believe that a pet store is a healthy environment for puppies and kittens. They need to get out and walk. They need exercise. Quote, a lot of the dogs that come into pet stores, they come from puppy mills, Gallagher added. Council ruled that pet store owners will now be able to take in shelter or rescue dogs and adopt them out, much like local humane societies. Opponents of the bylaw say that if customers can't get what they want in a Toronto pet store, they'll go to Mississauga or other cities in the GTA to find a dog or cat. The second piece of news coming from the Associated Press, and this is one that actually has been getting a lot of play on mainstream news sources, and I actually saw a video about this, and when you hear the story, you'll be shocked that they actually showed this. On CBC, it's about a holiday tradition that I didn't think in a lot of ways that Thanksgiving could get more cruel to turkeys, but this is one way. So the headline from the Associated Press is, no turkeys fall on Arkansas festival this year. This is in Yellville, Arkansas. Turns out turkeys don't fly. The Baxter Bulletin reports that attendees at the Turkey Trot Festival in Yellville were disappointed when no turkeys dropped from planes on Friday or Saturday. The turkey drop is a mainstay of the event in northern Arkansas. The organizers don't sanction it. Supporters say the turkeys can fly just enough to descend safely, but animal rights advocates call it cruel. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals posted a $5,000 bounty for information leading to an arrest. The Federal Aviation Administration said any pilots dropping turkeys could lose their licenses. People at the festival wore, quote, I am the Phantom Pilot t-shirts, and at least one sign offered a $10,000 reward for the arrest of the PETA employee who came up with the $5,000 bounty. Such a weird story. So if you find the video on CBC, if you look up Yellville turkey drop, they essentially drop a turkey out of a moving plane and claim that it will glide down safely to the ground, but the video shows otherwise. Actually, I don't recommend looking it up because it's quite ridiculous and cruel. But if you didn't know, now you know. The next story coming to us from voiceofthevoiceless.org, which is the website of Peter Young. This is a fresh story, just broke this weekend. Headline is, Iowa Mink and Fox Farm Raided, 1,200 plus mink released. After initially sparse reports, the full story is in. Sometime Thursday night, this is this past Thursday, 1,200 to 1,500 mink were liberated from a fur farm in Jewell, Iowa. The target is confirmed as Palmer Erickson's fur farm at 3374 Saratoga Avenue, Jewell, Iowa. According to various reports, four sheds at the west end of the property had cages opened. There is no report of any foxes being released. The Animal Liberation Front has not yet claimed responsibility. Iowa has had more fur farm raids than any other state, with this being the ninth recorded mink farm liberation. After 5 years of steady activity, there were no raids for eight straight years, from 2003 to 2011. This week's raid broke a long run of peace for fur farmers in Iowa. The response from the Fur Commission USA has been somewhat subdued compared to previous raids. They are only offering a $5,000 reward for the capture of those responsible, down from $100,000 in past years. The report from the FCUSA covers the fur farmer's version of how the raid was discovered. The attack was discovered when the family dogs started barking in the pre-dawn hours. Apparently interrupting the raid as evidence gathered at the site points to a hasty escape by the attackers. The current breakdown of the Iowa fur farming industry is 17 mink farms, 8 known fox farms, and 1 feed supplier. One of the fur farms, the Klingbeil Mink Farm in Remsen, is currently up for sale. A website has been put up to promote the sale of the farm at www.iowaminkfarmforsale.com. According to the list of fur farm raids, this is the third fur farm raided in Jewell and the last known fur farm in Jewell that has not been raided. One, the Scott Nelson Mink Farm, was forced to shut down after the ALF raided it twice in 1 week. In addition to animal releases, the Hawkeye Mink Cooperative, a short distance from the Palmer Erickson Farm, was broken into in 2003. Thousands of documents containing the fur farm addresses and other info were confiscated in that raid. And then in his article, he goes on to list all of the mink releases that have happened in Iowa. I do encourage you to check it out, www.voiceofthevoiceless.org. And the next story actually coming to us from the same website, voiceofthevoiceless.org. This is another liberation story. Saboteurs return. Remaining 20,000 fish released in California. 4 days after 40,000 fish were released from nets, saboteurs return and release the remaining 20,000. In an incredible move, saboteurs returned to the Bay Area site where 40,000 salmon were released Monday night and released the remaining 20,000. The pen that was untouched in Monday's action was cut open, releasing the last of the fish held captive by the Tiburon Salmon Institute. The head of the institute stated, quote, "They clipped the zip ties that hold the nets in place. We were trying to solicit funds for a security camera, but we couldn't get a security camera put up quick enough, and they came back." The Marin County's Sheriff's Department is investigating the vandalism and said they have a meeting planned with the FBI. The Animal Liberation Front has not claimed responsibility, and it is not yet confirmed this is the work of an animal liberation group. And then Peter Young goes to give some context, or rather some analysis, of the situation. He says, the conversation on these actions has centered on two things. One, the Institute's assertion that the fish were raised to be released into the bay anyway in a ceremony to be held October 30th. Two, how upset the high school students who raised the fish are. And he goes on to say, three things are lost here. One, the project was done in partnership with the San Francisco Thai Club, a fishing group, yet they would still have us believe this project was about helping fish. Two, the basic philosophical underpinning that humans do not have a say in where, how, or when any animal is held captive. Casa Grande high school students who were involved with this program have no right to imprison 40,000 fish in a big net for a single day. Anyone who keeps any animal anywhere in a cage should be reminded the ALF is watching, according to Peter Young. And three, most quote-unquote wildlife research is a fraud to benefit animal agriculture under the guise of conservation, he says. People who are involved in the program have been vocal about how well their fish are and were treated. They don't mention this humane treatment as 20,000 fish in 16 by 25 by 8 foot pens. Television news footage of the pens shows fish packed at a density that is clearly inhumane and unnatural for any salmon. Having now lost every fish held, the program of the Tiburon Salmon Institute and Casa Grande High School is a total loss. And those who held these fish captive are still complaining as though they had every right to keep the 60,000 fish in nets to begin with. Quote, this has put a damper on the whole project. We've got to find out who did this to us and why. It's so ludicrous. So there you have it, another liberation story and some analysis from Peter Young. And the last story today coming to us from the CUP, and the headline of the article is UBC Animal Rights Activists Expand Campaign. STOP begins work with similar campus groups across Canada. A UBC activist group is taking their campaign to end animal experimentation national. STOP UBC Animal Research, an animal rights group that started at the University of British Columbia's Vancouver campus, has begun working with other groups with similar goals at institutions across Canada. We started out concerned about the animals at UBC, and the more we learned about the issue, the more we felt there was an urgent need to reform the way that animal research is done in Canada, said STOP spokesperson Brian Vincent. In the long term, STOP hopes for an end to animal testing across Canada, but in the short term, advocates for more transparency for the experiments that are currently done. For the past year, STOP has been successful in bringing attention to animal experimentation at UBC, receiving coverage from both local and national media, in addition to public responses from UBC President Stephen Toop. Their campaigns resulted in UBC sparing the lives of 7 endangered sea turtles and 4 rhesus monkeys, all of which were slated for death. Earlier this year, STOP joined with dozens of other organizations to create the Canadian Coalition Against Animal Research and Experimentation, or CCARE, which included a number of nascent groups targeted at institutions such as the University of Toronto, Dalhousie University, and the University of Alberta, York University, and the University of Victoria. Quote, "We realized that there were little pockets of concerned citizens across Canada who were concerned about animal research going on in their communities, but they felt helpless. We're talking about sometimes 2 or 3 people." Vincent has already begun working with some of the groups at other universities. Quote, "We will be providing training for people across the country from STOP UBC Animal Research, so I'll be traveling to places, and probably the first place is Toronto. I've already done 2 Skype training sessions with them because they are the most active and up and running." Paul York, the coordinator of STOP U of T Animal Research, said that despite the fact that his group has been around for 3 years, they changed their name when they saw how successful Vincent's group was. They used to be called STOP Animal Experimentation at the University of Toronto. Quote, "Because of the work Brian and others there do, we decided to use the same name and even the same logo," he said. However, York said that his group has a different style of activism than the UBC branch. Quote, "The mood is a little bit different in Toronto than it is in Vancouver. I don't know if people are a little more conservative here or something, but it's very hard to organize demonstrations," he said. "So we're pursuing an educational route. That's not to say we're against the colorful stuff. I think that what Brian is doing is great, and I think that it's fantastic. But honestly, at this point, our group doesn't have the momentum to do that." York went on to say that his group has spent a good portion of the year setting up informational tables on campus, outside of research facilities, as well as organizing lectures on the moral and scientific arguments against animal research. Despite their smaller size, STOP U of T has had more luck in one area than its UBC counterpart has. York said that his group has successfully filed a Freedom of Information request with the university regarding the testing that's done at U of T, in which they actually received information, something UBC has never given up. Quote, "Normally they black out things like that, but we're very lucky that we got this report, and it indicates what the species are and how they're used," he said. York said that they found that over 200 experiments were done in the top 2 levels of invasiveness. Quote, "And this was pretty much on every kind of species. Hummingbird, monkey, newt, rat, mice, you name it." According to Vincent, when they filed a similar request at UBC, they got back a 70-page document, 60 pages of which were completely redacted. Besides this successful request, STOP U of T Animal Research has yet to receive any sort of official response from the university. Quote, "We call it a wall of silence. They won't engage with us. The only way they'll ever engage with us is if there's actually press. They don't want to talk to us." And that's the news for today, my friends. If you're interested in more about what's going on at University of Toronto with regards to activism against animal research, or rather activism for smarter animal research and more ethical research in general to sort of phase out animal research where it's not useful, please do check out the STOP U of T group. They're doing really excellent work, and they've presented a number of lectures and speakers here at the university in this very building where I'm broadcasting from at Hart House that have really contributed to a productive discussion, and they should get kudos for that because they're really trying to bridge a divide, and I've sort of witnessed the wall of silence for myself, and despite that, they're really persevering and trying to open up a dialogue with the research community here at U of T to try and curb animal testing and reduce it wherever possible, and just to raise awareness that this stuff is actually happening at the university. So kudos to them. Again, you are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM, and on today's program we're going to have Lisa Kramer and Kimberly Carroll talking about the Bee Veg campaign. The campaign is launching today on subway cars all around the city. Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of Animal Voices. My name is Karl Ozhahovsky, and we are broadcasting to you, not live, because it's kind of difficult to send a radio signal out from underground, but we are broadcasting to you sort of live, pre-recorded, from the Toronto subway system, the TTC. And I'm standing here with Lisa and Kimberly, who are behind the BeeVeg.ca ad campaign, and we're about to get on the subway and look at some ads and talk about the ads and talk about the campaign. Lisa and Kimberly, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's good to be here. Glad to be back.
So we're standing here on the Bloor line. We are going westbound. We're now at Spadina Station. And I'm standing here with Lisa Kramer and Kimberly Carroll. And Lisa and Kimberly, I wanted to start by asking you both if you could share your stories about going veg in the first place, since the Bee Veg campaign is sort of about inspiring people to go veg. Maybe we can start with that. So Lisa, I'll start with you.
Sure. It was a couple of decades ago, actually, and a friend invited me to her family's home to have Easter dinner, and I'd never really considered being vegetarian before. I had vegetarian friends, but hadn't really thought about it too carefully. And on the Easter dinner plate was Easter ham. And I just remember looking at it and seeing this sort of pink, fleshy material and making the sudden realization that that was a piece of pig on my plate. And from that moment on, I just could not put flesh in my mouth. It was that sudden.
Was there sort of media or things like that that contributed to that? Or was it, did it strictly sort of come from the heart?
I'm not consciously aware of any influences, but, you know, I do remember people talking to me about their choice to become vegetarian, and so I was aware of it, and I'm sure there were forces working in the background that influenced my development, but it was just sort of a sudden realization.
And Kimberly, how about yourself?
Well, I think I've told this story before on the program, so
I'm sorry if I repeat myself. That's okay.
But I'm a prairie girl. I come from Manitoba, grew up in farm country. So the idea of going veg was a little unusual to my family. A lot of my family are farmers. But it wasn't until about 15 years ago, I was at a friend's place for dinner during calving season, just after calving season, and I fell in love with these twin calves. And I played with them all afternoon, and they were so lovely. And I'd always been an animal lover, I put in quotations, and fell in love with these calves. We went in for dinner and there was steak on the plate, my favorite meal until that moment. At that point I just kind of went, it had already been something that had been in the back of my mind for a very long time, and I finally went, Kimberly, your ethics can be stronger than your appetite, it's time. And that started my trek into vegetarianism. And then it was, I guess, 5-6 years ago that I became a vegan. And that was really owed to documentaries like Peaceful Kingdom, Earthlings. And, you know, when I became a vegan, I also became an activist.
It's funny because we've never really talked about those stories. And it's amazing how similar they are.
I know, they really are. We're just these soft-hearted, you know.
We're soul sisters.
Yeah.
So this is the second time that the campaign is running, but I wanted to maybe rewind a little bit back to 2009 and what inspired you both to start that campaign in the first place.
Well, Lisa and I met just through various circles in the veg and animal protection community. Lisa had been wanting to do some sort of ad on the transit system. She'd seen how effective the Vancouver Humane Society's ads had been when she used to do some work for them back in Vancouver. And when I heard she was looking to do that, I went, that's right up my alley. Like, you know, I'm the media person. I want to do a big marketing campaign. So we wanted to do an ad that really, I mean, factory farming and animals, you know, the suffering of animals raised for food is just probably the most passionate issue for us as animal protection advocates. So we really wanted to do a campaign that connected people to those animals that are usually dismissed just as farm animals or those animals that are our food, and also take it a little deeper and really, as a social issue, show how factory farming, how prevalent it is and how horrific it is in our country, and really draw some light to that.
And Lisa, maybe you could let our listeners know, why advertising as opposed to, say, leafleting or something else like that?
Well, I'm a big advocate for the fact that people come to realizations based on different types of messages. And so I just haven't really seen anything in Toronto that utilized kind of the mainstream media to get this particular message across. And I thought it would be a great way to reach people that normally don't hear this message. So we chose to sort of cut across socioeconomic status and reach people where they commute to work.
And where their captive audience.
So true.
And we decided, like Lisa and I really put a lot of thought into how to design these ads. You know, we didn't want it to be an ad that was just going to be a gross out factor that was going to alienate a lot of people. We wanted to create ads that were very inviting, very provocative, you know, that had images that actually, you know, drew people in. And that's our three, you know, our cow, our pig, and our chicken facing the animal companions. Those are really actually inviting images, and we wanted that to be, you know, the sort of big image that calls out to people, draws them in, helps to make that connection to the animals that they typically consider farm animals, and then if they can be drawn in even more, find out the horrific conditions that these animals endure in factory farming in Canada.
Yes. Can I give a shout out?
Sure.
I'd like to give a shout out to Henry Spira.
Oh yes.
The late Henry Spira, who really fundamentally inspired this campaign. He had ad campaigns, you know, at least 30 years ago with the message, who do you love? Who do you eat? Why? And he had on those posters a juxtaposed picture of a piglet and a kitten, nose to nose. And it was very simple and really elegant, and it just sort of inspired this campaign. So I just want to pay props to him.
Henry, woo!
And how did you see that ad?
There's a book written by Peter Singer that pays tribute. It's called Ethics in Action, and it really describes Henry Spira's advocacy.
Let's, again, rewinding back to 2009. So you had this idea. Putting ads in the TTC is not an easy thing to do and takes money and a lot of effort. How important was a sort of grassroots approach to reaching out to the community and making sure this was like a community-supported effort?
Well, you know, the first time we did this, we didn't have really the time to involve more than a small group of grassroots activists, and this time we wanted to do it bigger and better and really involve so many more people who feel passionately about this cause. So the donors who contributed to this cause number in, there are more than 50 donors who contributed financially, and they donated anywhere from, you know, $2 to many thousands of dollars. So, you know, it's a real group effort in that sense.
And such a spectrum of people. We had like students, doctors, photographers, teachers, holistic healers, you know, lawyers. It was like just this great cross-section of people who are just really passionate about bringing suffering to an end for animals that are raised for food, and these are people that you're seeing, you know, sitting beside in the subway or seeing, you know, at dinner parties and everything. It's not a fringe group. These are people all over our society that are really concerned about the direction we're going with the treatment of animals in our society.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
On the subway right now.
Yeah.
So in 2009, you ran the ad campaign, and I've seen the ads for the 2011 campaign, and they look similar, but a little bit different. And so I'm wondering how important feedback was to that process. I spoke with you recently, Lisa, and you mentioned that there had been quite a bit of positive feedback and one very odd piece of negative feedback. Maybe talk a little bit about the feedback and how this campaign is maybe different and similar to the other one.
Well, the positive feedback that we heard was tremendous. We heard stories of complete families becoming vegetarian. We heard about water cooler discussions that were taking place in people's workplaces. people who had been having trouble convincing their partners to become vegetarian, they would see the ads and suddenly realize that they had to make a change. So we were just flooded with the positive feedback. The one piece of negative feedback I got was kind of surprising that we got on the campaign. Somebody wrote to us and they were concerned that when people saw the posters, they might be convinced to start eating cats and dogs, which is the opposite of what our intended message is actually. But hey, I mean, if we're getting people to think about the ethics of eating any kind of animals, I think we're achieving something tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, we did get we got some negative feedback, but by email and certainly on the subway, we got a lot of graffiti on those posters. Yeah,
which is probably very normal for any type of ad campaign.
Well, I think
really, we
had a higher volume of graffiti than usual, but it was the same line over and over again. You know, it's like because the title of the ad is "Why Love One But Eat the Other," and it's because the other one tastes good. You know, that was the same one over and over. Over and over again. And I think, for me, like, when people are taking the time to do graffiti, it means we're touching, we're hitting a button, we're touching a chord, you know?
I found it interesting just lurking on the subway, watching people's reaction to the ads. You know, people would sort of glance at them and then look away, and then they'd be drawn back, and they'd look a little bit longer and start to read some of the text, and you could just see the transition happening in their minds. And we had a chance to ask some of them what was going on, and they would tell us that, you know, it was definitely making them think about their food choices, and that's really the first step along this path.
A lot of people haven't made that, you know, that connection between the dog and the pig, the cat and the chicken. It seems surprising, but obviously we hadn't until our telltale moments that we just mentioned. And so, you know, I just got an email from one of the donors of his present campaign today saying, "I love this campaign because that is the exact question that turned me vegetarian 20 years ago." And then we also, you know, really wanted to, there's a lot of people that surprisingly don't know about factory farming, you know, so we really wanted to be able to put that out there. And so, I mean, it is very surprising. The TTC doesn't usually let graphic, you know, stuff on the TTC, but I think because we framed it with this a very attractive looking poster ad, we slip some graphic stuff in there and some very graphic descriptions in there, which I think if people are willing to go in deeper and spend some time with it, which they're kind of forced to do when they're on the subway, it's very effective. It's like a crash course. It's like, you know, Animal Rights 101.
And I seem to remember on the 2009 ads, there were sort of little pictures. Like underneath the main picture, there were smaller pictures of factory farming. And was including that stuff an issue? Did you have to discuss that with the
TTC? We had to get it approved by the TTC, so we were on pins and nails waiting because there have been a lot of ads rejected in the past, and we were really happy that they let put their stamp of approval on.
And I want to point out about some of those graphic images that, you know, many of them are taken in Canadian farming contexts, and I think that some Canadians have the misperception that these horrific conditions don't exist on Canadian farms, and they very, very much do. And so, you know, part of the reason that we're including some of these graphic images is to remind people that this stuff happens right here at home.
Over 95% of the farming that's done in Canada is on factory farms. So that's a huge portion. So anybody that's, you know, has this idyllic image still of chickens and pigs romping on a farm, it doesn't happen anymore. And in fact, Canada's animal welfare laws are behind America in a lot of ways.
The previous campaign you were telling me just now was somewhere around 270, 280 ads. And this campaign is going to be in the thousands or 1,000, somewhere around there.
1,000.
So we're standing on the TTC right now, and looking around, I would say that one subway car, these are the vertical poster ads, so I would say that one subway car probably holds 20. Something like that, 20 or so.
Yeah.
So if one subway car holds 20, that means five subway cars is 100, and so you're looking at...
So we're looking at about two ads per subway car.
Oh, two ads, it's going to be... If you shove them all onto one, it would be somewhere around five, six subway cars, or 10, I don't know.
Our math is not our
math is not
our strong
point.
Well, actually, if I speak for myself, I'll ask the finance professor here.
and my pins and needles.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I imagine that a bigger campaign is going to result in more feedback, obviously more eyeballs seeing the ads. how have you prepared for doing a bigger campaign?
First, to answer the math question, it would fill up 50 subway cars.
50 subway cars, which is a lot. Which that's probably several entire lines.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and we had the option to fill up maybe one subway car for the cost of doing this campaign with 1,000 posters, and we just thought it would be more effective to spread the posters through the entire subway system.
It's going to be a bigger campaign, obviously, and you're going to get more feedback and maybe more criticism and more weird criticism, too. How have you sort of mentally prepared for that stuff, and do you have what kind of sort of support do you have in place to answer people's feedback?
Well, I think we're mentally ready because our main goal is to start a dialogue, and we're happy to talk to people as they, you know, ponder this whole campaign and want to talk about it. We've got a bunch of volunteers this time, fellow grassroots activists who are helping us with every aspect of the campaign. So we're going to have a Twitter feed, you know, we've got a Facebook page, we'll have help responding to emails. This time we've got the Toronto Vegetarian Association supporting us, and we're just so happy for their affiliation with the campaign.
They've been absolutely amazing in helping us in our fundraising blitz, and they've been really, really great partners to work with. So, and we're starting a brand new website. So beveg.ca is hopefully going to give everybody the resources they need from more, you know, if they want to go further into what animals on factory farms face, to how to eat veg, to the reasons, the health, environment, and animal reasons to go veg. Tons of resources, so we're really trying to equip people with their, like I said, their first, a really positive first veg experience. And even though the poster, you know, says be compassionate, be vegetarian, we used the word vegetarian because we wanted to not alienate people. We thought that people in mainstream would be able to relate to that word more, but we want to be clear that the posters talk about all the animals that are involved in being raised for food, so that includes dairy cows, egg-laying chickens. Everything we have on the website leads towards a vegan diet. So,
we are just about at the end of the line, so we're going to take a short break, and we're going to head back eastbound, back towards St. George Station. We'll show the... because the ads go up next week. Actually, the ads will be going up today when this show is airing. So Tuesday, October 11th is when you can start seeing these ads in your local TTC zone. So do keep an eye out for them. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we have some copies of the 2011 ads with us here. We'll show some people and hopefully get some feedback and see what they think. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Stay tuned. So we're back on Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM, and I'm here speaking with Lisa Kramer and Kimberly Carroll.
And we've got seats now.
And we have seats now. And we are speaking about the 2011 Be Veg Subway ad campaign. Before the break, we were talking about all kinds of stuff, but what I wanted to talk about now quickly is... this is a bit different from the last campaign. The last campaign was Choose Veg, and this one is Be Veg. Why the shift?
It's more pragmatic than conceptual. We wanted to have our own independent website. The first run, we had wonderful assistance from Mercy for Animals, and they were just lovely to work with. They helped us, because they've done a lot of campaigns like this in the States. So they helped us, you know, gave us some guidance and everything. And so we really wanted to pay them homage by putting them on the ads. And they also supplied our website, chooseveg.ca, which is an offshoot of chooseveg.com, their website. And for this run, we really wanted it to be just purely Canadian, and we discussed with Mercy for Animals, and we didn't want to, you know, cloud their website. So we had a wonderful donor give us beveg.ca and beveg.com, and so logistically we just needed to change the tagline to match.
Now, the website is obviously meant to serve as a resource for people who see the ad and are inspired to find out more information. So maybe let our listeners know what they will find at the website, which is set to launch today.
Before the 11th, yeah, for today. Well, let me see. Like I said, we really want it to just be a one-stop shop for people, like when they're curious about all aspects of being veg, from the health aspects to the ethical aspects to, you know, where do I go out for dinner? You know, how do I cook? You know, what are some groups I can get involved with? So we didn't want to bite off too much. There's so many good things out there and so many good resources out there. So we do a lot of referral on this website. We've really tried to choose the best resources and the best websites, best videos, best books, and just really give people a nice taste of how they can get deeper into this search.
Yeah, something else I want to point out about the website is all of the posters are actually available on the website. So people can go to beveg.ca and download all three of the posters in standard 8.5x11 format. Folks can print the posters out and put them up on bulletin boards at work, hand them out. We encourage people to distribute them far and wide if they're so inclined.
I wanted to ask about that because when we spoke about a week ago, you mentioned that sort of one of the ways that you're calling people to action, potentially people who are already vegetarian or vegan who see these ads, is that by going to the website, there are some resources there for people to be able to broaden the campaign even further. You mentioned that the posters are sort of open source and people can download them and do that stuff.
Yeah, and in fact, we've had organizations from other geographic areas approach us and ask to use the ads in their hometown, and we're totally happy to support that. So if people know other organizations or grassroots collections of activists who want to do a similar campaign in their own community, we're happy to, you know, give them guidance to help them make that happen.
St. Catharines Niagara Action for Animals took the ad last summer and made it into a billboard campaign in the Niagara and St. Catharines region. So that was really good, and we're hoping to do even more outreach this time, and because there were a lot of interesting countries that were coming to us saying we'd love to do this campaign. And we have, you know, people just randomly posting posts. I had a woman from Australia email me the other day and say, I've been posting your ads around Australia now for, like, the last year. And
yay!
I'm like, awesome. And we have teachers coming to us asking to, you know, get posters to use in their classrooms. So it's really, this ad has really struck a chord for a lot of people, I think, because it encapsulates a lot of things in a very accessible way.
Is the website and the resources that are available very Toronto-centric? Because it is, I mean, it says Toronto Vegetarian Association on the ad, and for the actual ad campaign, most people seeing the ads will be from, well, probably from Toronto.
Yeah.
So are there resources available on the website for people who don't necessarily live in this city?
Yeah, absolutely. For the people who live in Toronto, we provide the Toronto Vegetarian Association restaurant guide, for example, to help people find a place to eat here. But many of the resources are not geographic specific at all. So, you know, we've got vegetarian cooking guides and links to all sorts of resources that are useful any place.
Absolutely. And the groups, we do a pretty extensive listing of the various animal rights and veg groups, and that we do it on a local level, a Canadian level, and a global level. So, yeah, no. So we're hoping that a lot of people from around the world are going to actually come to this, you know, website too. And you know, the thing that we're really hoping that you know, the veg and the AR community are going to help us with is just really spreading the word, getting the buzz going, joining our Facebook page, following us on Twitter. Just really, you know, I mean, I think the buzz is going to be big, but you know, I'd love to get it started as soon as possible. And our hope is to garner some really big media coverage from this time around too.
Oh, we should mention our Twitter handle actually.
Yes.
It's BeVeg Canada.
Yeah.
BeVeg Canada. And the website again is www.beveg.ca. There I'm sure you'll find links to the Facebook group, to the Twitter page, and whatever other resources will be there when the campaign launches on the 11th. We are going to take a very short break, and then we'll be back with some feedback.
You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM, and we've been listening to an interview with Kimberly Carroll and Lisa Kramer about the Toronto BeVeg subway ad campaign. It was pretty interesting, actually. We had a bunch of examples of the ads, and because we were on the subway during sort of a switchover period, there were a lot of empty ad spaces around the subway. So we put up some of the ads in the subway, and we asked people what they thought. And unfortunately, some of the sort of most insightful comments that we recorded were marred by a lot of heavy noise as we got back towards the center of the line. But I wanted to play a few of them. The first is from a young man named Alex, who is a meat eater and has never seen the ads before. This was his reaction.
When you see that, the why love one but eat the other, is that a question that's ever occurred to you before?
Personally, not really.
No?
No.
You're a meat eater, I'm assuming.
Well, I was a vegetarian for a while.
Oh, were you? Yeah.
But it was more of a, like just trying something out, just a dietary
right.
thing.
More of a health thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, when you take a look at it and you see those two, do you have a dog by any chance or a cat? You don't? Okay. So, you know, are you an animal lover, would you
I
say?
Am, yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask you, like, these are images from factory farming in Canada and the U.S. Like, this is sort of the typical practices that happen. You know, like mother pigs not being able to move their whole lives because they're in gestation crates, and castrations and teeth being clipped without anesthetic. Were you aware, like, about factory farming, like the sort of extent of this intensive farming in Canada?
Well, I was aware of it, but not quite of their practices, that's for
right.
sure.
Right.
Would it surprise you to see an ad like this on the TTC? Have you seen any ads like this before on the TTC?
Not to my knowledge, but I mean, it doesn't really surprise me. It's actually good that it's here, probably.
So that was some commentary from Alex, who was on the subway. The next chunk of commentary is from a woman named Christina, and she actually has a daughter who is veg, and she describes a little bit about what the ad reminded her of in terms of her sort of cultural perspective.
I wasn't aware of how it's done here, right?
Yeah.
Like, I have family from Europe and South America, and they don't do things this way, right?
Right.
They
right.
eat for survival. I mean, they kill the animals for survival, but it's not as brutal, I feel, as the way they do it here.
Yeah.
So that was a short clip from Christina, who saw the ads, and she juxtaposed her experience of the ads against what she feels is how they do it in different countries, although she mentioned Europe, and a lot of the practices that were shown in those ads are similar in Europe. The final reaction that I wanted to play is from a woman named Anna. She's a young woman who was on the TTC. We showed her the ads, and this is what she thought of them.
For CIUT about this ad campaign that's going to be running on the TTC as of Tuesday. There's a set of three ads that ask why love one but eat the other. Whoops, that's upside down. Do you remember by any chance seeing these ads when they ran a couple of years ago?
No, but I've only been in Toronto this is my second year.
Oh,
so
okay, got it.
If that's helpful.
Well, 1,000 of these ads are going to be on the subway as of Tuesday. They basically talk about the animals that we usually consider food, show some of what they go through in factory farming. Any first impressions?
I really like this one because I have a few friends who said they're vegetarian, and especially for like animal rights, and they still eat chicken and fish.
Okay.
Very confusing to me. Like,
yeah. Last time I checked, chickens are animals.
Well, yeah, and especially if you're going to stop eating for animal rights, eating chicken to me seems like the most bizarre. But yeah, I think they're good and obviously very effective.
And were you aware, like, I mean, seeing some of these factory farming, you know, photos, like, are you fairly aware of factory
yes.
farming and everything?
Yes, but I don't think everybody is.
Yeah, no, it's not. Common knowledge is
the next
thing.
Station is
yeah.
Dufferin.
Yeah, I think they're good.
Dufferin
yeah,
Station.
Excellent.
What's this one? One
point. Oh, yeah, sure. This one is, this is my favorite one. The pig and the... Yeah. So these photos, you see a mother pig, and most mother pigs in Canadian factory farming are kept in gestation crates for their entire lives. They can't even turn around. They do castrations, clipping teeth without any anesthetic. And, you know, a lot of the piglets actually get killed because they're of no use to the system.
I'm actually already a vegetarian, so.
Good, yay!
But, I mean, I think... Yeah.
Well, maybe this will even push you over one more step to vegan.
Do you think any of these ads would sort of be effective on the friends of yours that you're talking about?
Probably, yeah. I think pictures are most, you know, obviously videos are better, but you can't do those in the subway. But yeah, pictures are the most effective. Even like making these big, I mean, obviously these are going up, but like making these the most impactful things sort of on
the next station is Ossington.
Sorry, you mean the factory farming these images?
Pictures, yeah, because
to see the more of the shock.
Yeah, I mean these are cute and they like sort of draw people in. But,
yeah, exactly.
And I do think they're well done. I think they're good posters.
Yeah, our thoughts were that a lot of people will just get so defensive when they see these kind of photos that we wanted to sort of invite them in and be a little less threatening. Yeah. And then once they're engaged, then they might be a little bit more open to look at the harder stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but next time we'll just take one of those. Yeah. Can we get your name?
Anna.
Anna, thank you, Anna.
Anna, thanks so much. So I think that's good for our little experiment, and I wanted to thank you both for being on the program because it's always fun to do something a little bit different on the show, and it's been really fun riding the subway with you both.
It's been fun riding with you too, girl.
We can have our sea legs, you know, it's good.
I could do this all day now.
Yeah, exactly. So this show will be airing on Tuesday, October 11th, and that's the official launch date of the campaign. We're hoping that at that time there all 1,000 ads will be up, although
it'll be a little slower than that. So October 11th is the day that posters will start going up, and they'll trickle out over the next few days. So yeah, definitely watch for them.
I will be watching for them, and I think I'm expecting one of the ads.
You get one of the ads, Carl, because you are one of our esteemed donors.
And I think I actually specifically asked for one of the graffitied ads.
Oh, yeah, it's yours.
Because I think it would be hilarious to have it in my place. So thank you so much, both of you, Kimberly Carroll and Lisa Kramer, for being on the program today. You have been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM, and coming up next is Raw Sugar.